Hi, Frank.
How are you doing, Con?
What time you got here?
I'm delayed as well, but all right.
Well, you're look out.
How many?
And trout waiting for us.
Right. We're going to catch some.
Well, it wasn't good with the last hour. And I don't think we'll get any.
Oh, why wouldn't I? We'll get fish. Did you get fish today?
We did. We got fish early in the day.
Yeah.
We had four lovely fish there now coming in.
Where were you?
We were back out around the Tonnies there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Out of the Tonny.
And what were they getting them on?
And they were getting them on, as a matter of fact, I haven't seen one caught for a while on them now, on a claret bumble.
Oh.
A big claret bumble. And bigger than we normally fish.
Today,
but there you go, it just works.
Very bright for a claret bumble.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, but you and I might, doctors differ when patients die, as you know. Come on out here till I teach you a lesson.
Right, I'm looking forward to that lesson now.
Come on.
I'll bring a rod though.
Bring a rod. We're at Greenfields here on the eastern side of Loch Corrib, just directly on the western side, then you have Oak Gerard, you know. And we're pushing out here from the Our Lodge, or it has been renamed, it used to be Our Lodge long ago. It's Ostan Cosh Corriba now. And it's the local hostelry here that caters for all the anglers and the locality and the locals as well. And this is where it all happening on this side of the lake here. This is the venue where most of the fishing takes place from. You know, there's about 100 boats normally moored around this locality here.
Describe the boat to me now that we're about to get into.
The boat we're about to get into, it's a Burke boat built by Burkes in Ballinrobe, John Paddy Burke and his family. They build them there. It's a fiberglass boat and it has got teak trim on it, teak seats. And it's an 18.5 foot usual corrib boat. Great little boat altogether, about a 5'2" beam. It's a fantastic boat to suit all conditions out here, that all fishable conditions, you know.
Describe the conditions tonight now, Con.
Conditions tonight are, well, not ideal, far from ideal. As I just mentioned to Frank there earlier on, that it didn't look to me like an ideal evening. But then again, Frank has a few tricks up his sleeve, and I have a few tricks up my sleeve, and I'm hoping we might, when the sun drops a little bit. You see, the angle of the sun is all important to fishing. If the angle is very low, the fish seem to be find it difficult to see the fly in the water, and they won't come to it.
So who have we got? We got Frank with us tonight. Who's the boss today?
Frank? Oh, Frank's the boss.
Connor's the boss.
There you go now. That's a toss up. Who's going to be boss? The boss will be whoever gets the fish. Well, we'll push out here now and we'll hit out and see what we can do. All set, Frank?
Yeah, no problem.
We're off to the back of Inchiquin, out to the Tannies, as they're called locally here, out to the Tannies. And what we really wanted, though, was a hatch of sedge. We got the sedge coming up now. We'll be really in business this evening, but I'm not too hopeful in that very bright sunshine. However, at duskish they may come. And if they do, we'll have fish. And if fish don't come itself, we will have a lovely evening's fishing. Looking directly into the sun, you have the Glan Shore over here, which is over beyond Oak Gerard, another very famous fishing spot up along the Glan Shore there, particularly for salmon. It's a great lie for salmon along the Glan Shore. And then you have directly west of us here now, you have Oak Gerard Bay itself and the islands going into it over there. You have Cusafour and Inishool and Inishambo and Rowlin inside then, and you have all the bay, the inner bay in Oak Gerard itself is in behind that row of islands. And Prison Island down into Ballycurran there. And you see the lighthouse in Ballycurran now. If you just see the sunshine is showing it up. That's one of the oldest lighthouses, and the first lighthouses ever. It belonged to the old landlords here.
Are you from the area yourself?
Or? Originally from Donegal. I'm living here at Headford for the last 22 years. And I've been fishing Loch Corrib since 1963 when I first came out on it. Came out with the late Michael Kavanagh from Annadown. The Lord be good to him. He was a great angler on the lake. And Michael Kavanagh was the first man ever took me out to Loch Corrib in 1963.
Now, as a boatman yourself, you take people out all the time. You show them you share your knowledge of the lake. When you started fishing, was there a different tradition of the boatman, or was it a different role?
Oh, it was. It's getting difficult now to get boatmen because in the years, the last couple of decades, it's been getting more difficult to get boatmen because, of course, we have traditionally a lot of the fishermen, the old traditional fishermen, are gone, and it's difficult to get replacements to that sort of trade because it was a trade that stemmed from unemployment, and you know, people who were unemployed, they give their services here on the lake, and they provided a very good service, and there were some great characters then among them. You know, the boatman was expected to be a bit of a character, and you had some wonderful characters. They knew the lake intimately from end to end, and boating was their pride and joy. You know, we had the late Jim Monaghan here, and in Chacoun Island, he was one of the characters and boatmen of this side of the lake here. And of course, you had the late Andrew Egan from Inishmacatrier as well. And you had the late Tom McAvady, another renowned boatman on the lake from Inishmacatrier Island.
So what makes a good boatman?
Oh, what makes a good boatman is the hours he has spent out here studying the lake and getting to know it. And of course, tradition. There's a lot of tradition handed on down from one to the other, you know, of where fish lie at certain times of the year and the different flies and the different seasons and where to avoid different dangerous bays on a south wind and on a north wind and so on like that. It's all lore like that that makes a good boatman, and knowledge of the lake and the elements and the fish and their movements. And of course, there's also the fly life and all the aquatic life that goes with it. It's all intertwined. And
so looking at the conditions tonight, Con, what would your advice be now to Frank here?
Frank here is he's casting very well, I must say. He throws a good line, but he's you know, he's fishing very fast there now. He catches small fish, really. I like to take it slower for the big fellas, you know, like my time of day now. Take things a little bit easier than Frank does, and the big trout, they love to sneak up on something going slowly. You see, it's very hard work for them to catch those flies of Frank's now. Look at the way he's pulling them in there. You see, I take mine nice and gently, and we'll see how it'll go.
Well, we're fishing for brown trout. A salmon would be a bonus. You can get salmon occasionally on the wet flies on the Corrib, more in the summer now than this time of the year. But primarily we're looking for brown trout, wild brown trout here. My rig is an 11'3". It's an 11'3" Sage rod, and I have a Leda LC reel on it, with 35 yards of an intermediate line and about 50 yards of backing. So I'm fishing the intermediate line. That takes the flies just subsurface, just a little bit under the surface. I have four flies on. I have a golden olive bumble on, which is one of Kingsville Moore's flies. I have a green peter. I have a small claret dabbler, and I have a green hopper on the tail. And I'm hoping that the trout out here will like that menu. But as Con says, it is a bit bright. The conditions aren't ideal. And that's also why I chose the golden olive bumble.
What about the time of the year, Frank?
Well, this is September. It is a good time of year for fishing. Fish tend to move around a bit more this time of the year. And they tend to feed because they're coming into the winter months and coming on to the spawning season. So their target is to build up reserves for the winter and give them energy to spawn if the fish are going to spawn.
And what about the boatman tonight?
I know Con a long time, yeah. Con is in this area over 20 years, and I'm over 20 years myself, and I'd say I know him from around that time.
Is he a good boatman?
Well, we'll see now tonight. It's lovely to be sitting up in the top seat. Now, I wouldn't have picked this drift myself personally.
Where do you see now? Where do we hit this big fella down here now? Do you hear that? My goodness, no faith already. Did you not know, Frank, that half the battle out here is having faith? Well, I have absolute faith in this drift and absolute faith in that I'll get a fish in it. Because otherwise there's no good in tossing out the line there. You have to have faith in what you're doing, you know. The only thing I haven't faith in is the weather conditions at the minute are a little bit off-putting to fish. Yeah, it's very bright. The sun is absolutely stark, or isn't the sky bright, you know. But it's dropping, and hopefully when it gets below the skyline a little bit, we will be into fish.
What are the traditions or the taboos associated with carib or with trout fishing?
Oh, there are many taboos and traditions and hang-ups among anglers about wearing a particular cap on going out fishing, or wearing a particular pants even. I have seen fellas in, they hadn't their lucky pants with them today, that's why they didn't get fish. And there are lots of taboos and things like that. And of course there's always the lucky rod that always catches the fish. Every angler realises, of course, that there's a great element of luck in angling, in that you can have a real duffer come out here and take the biggest fish out of the lake, and the crack anglers on the day mightn't get one at all. We've seen it happening, you know. So that luck, we all realise you can be very skillful angler and all the rest of it and have up everything that's perfect, and yet someone who is very inexperienced angler can come along and do the business on the day. It's just like that, angling.
Is that the beauty of it for you, Colin?
It is, absolutely. Out here, it's a great equaliser.
Can you describe to us what you're actually doing here, how you're casting and what you're...
What I'm doing here now is I'm using an orange-coloured float line, and I'm tipping the flies along on the surface through the wave, you know, and bobbing them along through the wave, and hopefully some trout will spot them and fancy one of them and take it. And I'm fishing with an 11.5-foot rod. Rods have got change as styles of fishing change, and rods change. Manufacturers come out with different rods. And when I fished here, first of all, rods were all 9 or 10 foot at the most, and now they're up to 11.5 foot. Different styles. So I used to fish with a green heart rod and a cane, split cane rod. They were very heavy rods. Believe you me, when you fished a day with one of those, you knew you were fishing. But and the reels were also heavy then. They were usually brass reels, and of course they were nearly everlasting. that's
just
the difference.
Describe exactly here where you're pulling the line through with your left hand into
your
right.
Yes, I'm pulling the left, pulling with the left hand, and then keeping control of it. It passes through my right middle finger as well, which is around the butt of the rod, and that way, if a fish strikes, they can just in a split second tighten the finger on it and make sure that the hook is set in the fish. And you have a better chance when you have full control over the line. You have to have full control over it at all times, because if you haven't, the fish will get free. Well, Frank, anything doing?
Not yet, no, Con, but...
No, things are very, very quiet over this end of the boat.
We need the sun to drop another little bit, I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, now coming on to the tanny here, Frank.
Yeah,
I have always risen him here, just at the edge of the tanny.
Oh, I'm working it here now.
Yeah.
Nice spot for a fish, and you can
lovely,
get a good fish
lovely
in it too.
For a fish, yeah. And not too far in either, out off it there, you know.
What's the condition of the carib at the moment? Is it in good health?
It's in reasonable health, but we can see a deterioration, Michael. You know, there is a deterioration. I have noticed it year by year. There's a deterioration in the quality of the water. You will see more algae on it. And
we see more weed growth.
And the weed growth is phenomenal. Well, that indicates water enrichment, over-enrichment of the water, you know.
We see more buzzards, you know, and that's another indicator.
Yeah.
As we said, like, we see the feeding pattern of the trout changing. So all of these things are indicators. Whereas the water quality is reasonably good, but there is a concern there, like, you know, and we've all got to be watchful and careful, and we've all got to speak out when you have to speak out on these things.
Have you put up a claret bumble?
No, I didn't.
No.
I'm sticking to my old favourites now. I have that golden olive bumble on.
Yeah.
I reckon he'd
well, I have
that.
A claret on the tail now.
Yeah, that should do, yeah.
And I have an olive dabbler on the bob, but so far no good.
Oh, any minute now, I'd say.
Are we losing the light here slightly, or what will happen when it gets to dusk, to darkness?
The sun is dipping. Sun is dipping now behind the hills, and it should improve now. The light is improving. Now, the next thing now we want is if we could get a hatch. We got buzzards moving now this time of night, or we got sedge moving. We'd be really in business.
That's fly life, isn't it?
Fly life, yeah. It would bring the trout up. The trout, they conserve their energy very much, and they will stay near the food source. And there's a lot of food down there on the bottom.
Are they lazy fish?
They are, of course. Minimum effort to attain their objective, and their objective is to feed themselves as well as possible down there. And they will not come up needlessly at some strange-looking thing like a fly weeping up passing, unless they are already up and at it. If they're up and in business looking for flies, then they'll take our fly. Chances are they'll take it, but when they're down there and don't want to come up, it's very difficult to shift them. They're very set in their ways like that. They have such an abundance of surface food down there that in the bottom, you know, it's unbelievable. All the different larvae and all sorts of. They have snails that they eat a lot of down there, the freshwater snails, and all sorts of larvae and insect life down underneath that they browse away on. And they don't have to come up at all. No fly life yet, Frank.
No, I haven't seen
Don't see a fly at all on the water. I was out earlier in the day and I saw a few mayfly. And
yeah.
It's now the 10th of September and the mayfly should be long gone, but they're not.
So does boredom ever come into it, Con? I mean, as an angler and also as a boatman, if you have some people there with you and they're not catching, what do you do?
It never comes into it out here. You know, the time just stands still out here. We forget about time and you forget everything out here. It's boredom doesn't come into it. The day passes in a twinkle when one's enjoying oneself.
But there may be occasions when you have anglers out here whom you're boating for who aren't catching, or they realise that maybe it's not the day for them. And
yes, well, you see, there's a challenge there, Michael. There's a challenge. That presents a challenge to the boatman. Now, I have had anglers out here and they caught no fish at all. And they went home exceptionally happy people because they enjoyed their days angling. Everywhere I brought them, they knew from what I told them and what they saw that there was fish there and it was up to them to catch them. Now, you can bring the angler out, you can show him where the fish are, and unless he's able to take them, you won't be able to take them for him, you know. And I've seen them coming in very, very happy people. They just spent the day out here, enjoyed the boating, the exuberance of the wave and boating through it all day on the lake and the fishing. And perhaps they'd meet a fish or two, lose one. The big fella usually is lost. The one that gets away, you know. And sometimes he may not be very big at all, but in the evening in the pub, he's huge. Certain boatman that I knew one time, and he used to have a few loose stones, pebbles in his pocket. And if the guests were flagging and there was no fish rising, he'd toss a pebble out in the water and say, "Oh, sir, fish." And immediately everybody would pick up and start fishing again, renew the whole their enthusiasm for the game. But we don't go to that extreme now here, Michael. No, we don't. Well, hopefully now we won't have to tell any tales tonight, Frank. It's looking good here at the minute now. I'm waiting just for the water to open any second under my flies here and a big carp trout to take off with them.
And how good is trout's eyesight? I mean, I believe they've got no eyelids.
Oh, they have excellent eyesight. Anything that's out there, believe you me, they will not miss it. If they want to see it, they'll see it. No matter how small.
They have a tunnel. The trout have tunnel vision. It's like a funnel up from the head. So the deeper they are in the water, the more they can see on the surface. So, for example, my fly is there now. I'm pulling them through the water. And if there's a fish, say 7 or 8 foot under the water, he can see quite a big area above him. And what I'm hoping is that he'll see my flies being pulled across the water a little bit faster than the normal insect would be moving, and that would be enough to excite him and tempt him to come and have a look. And hopefully then when he comes and has a look, he'll decide that it's for him and he'll have a go.
I haven't seen any fish rising yet, Frank.
Oh, you
missed him. Just as I spoke.
Go up to the golden olive bumble.
Nice little fish, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, one lucky trout.
Oh. Well, that's the start. That's the first fish we've met now.
Yeah. He just broke the surface under it, really.
At the very last minute.
Oh, and it's always the way.
Yeah, right near the boat.
He didn't play ball at all.
We're losing the light here, are we?
Oh, it's just lovely now. The light is brilliant now.
It's grand at the minute.
Conor, are there any musical traditions associated with the carib and with fly fishing?
Well, there are, you know, a few old ditties that are sung in the pubs and things like that there, you know, about what Phyllis sing when they're singing about their boats here. It's very often the Queen of Connemara, they'll sing that song. But some of the old boatmen, you know, they had their own way of going. The late Jim Monaghan now from Inchiquin Island here. Jim was a real character on the lake, and when things were going really bad out here, Jim would sing to the fish in the hope that he'd bring them up, you know. And he had a particular ditty, and it was very easy to remember the words, and it went like this. Come perchy, come pikey, come trouty to me. Come trouty, come perchy, come pikey to me. Come pikey, come perchy, come trouty to me. And so on and so forth. So the words were very easy to remember. And he used to tell me he was a firm believer in it, that it worked. So now, Frank, look out.
I'm ready, Pat.
You're ready.
I'm ready now.
Yeah. We've sung to them and hopefully they'll come.
The role of the boatman has changed a lot, you know, in the last, 80, 90, 100 years. Like back in the 1900s and up to the 1920s, 1930s, up to the war, the First World War, there was no engines. So it would be needed for two men to row the boat, like, and one fisherman. At that time it was usually English anglers that fished here mostly, and they would hire two boatmen for a day or for a week or whatever. And they would, on the carib here, they would usually would come into Uachtaráid, because we had a train service into Uachtaráid at that time, and they'd be able to come into Uachtaráid and stay there then for their week or 2 weeks, and they'd hire two men for the period then. And the two men actually had to row the boat around the lake. And the boats were big enough boats, like they were still the 18 foot wooden boats. They were probably narrower, but they were still a heavy boat to row in a big wind. And they might have to row 3 or 4 or 5 miles back home in the evening. So it was a tough way to make a living.
So is there no pleasure in rowing a boat at all, Con?
Oh, there is. Oh, there's no doubt about it. I get great pleasure out of rowing a boat, and the feel of the oars and the bounce of the boat into the wave, you know. It's an exhilarating experience, there's no doubt about it, until you get tired at it if you're going against the wind. It's lovely rowing with the wind.
And was the boatman expected to provide any food or drink or anything?
No, the boatman didn't. Traditionally, the guests or the establishment who kept the guests, they provided the boatman. They set out a packed lunch with the guests and with the boatman. That was tradition in most of the guest houses and hotels who kept the visiting anglers years ago. And they provided the boatman with his lunch. That was part of the deal. And you might notice there's a box here now in the boat. I'll just show it to you here, Michael. And I keep that box for the sole purpose of what's inside in it makes me the most splendid tea in the world, I'd say. And that tea is made from the carob water here, boiled in what they call the Kelly kettle too. It's a gadget, a kettle with a hole up through the middle of it. And the when you light it with a bit of paper and some twigs, the flame comes up through the middle of the kettle. And I'll show it to you here now, Michael. The flame comes right up through the middle of it, and it heats the water very quickly, so that once you have it lit, within about 5 minutes, you have a quart of hot boiling water. Lovely carob water for making tea. Here it is now. That's the tradition. That one's very old. That one is at least 30 years old, if not older. Mm. It was an heirloom that was passed on to me by a gentleman who fished this lake for a long number of years.
It's quite tall. It's a hollow tin.
Yeah, there's a hole up through the centre of it. And I presume that whoever made it originally was probably a stiller. Yes, because it certainly took the mind of a stiller, possibly an illegal stiller, to make that particular kettle, you know, because... It's absolutely marvellous. There are two layers in it, and the water is contained in between the two layers, and there's a hole, as you can see, right down through it. The water goes in this one, and the flame comes up through the centre of it, with the result that the water is thinly dispersed around inside between the two skins of the kettle, and any heat at all in the centre then is hitting the water. And within 5 minutes... I guarantee you, Michael, within 5 minutes of that being lit, you will have thumping, boiling water coming out of it and the most beautiful tea in the world from that, and made from the carob water here. It's absolutely fantastic. And I will say that all the guests that come out here, they will tell you that they can never get tea anywhere like they get from the boatmen in Loch Carrib. Well, Frank, where's that 3-pounder?
Well,
we're expecting.
He'll be here now very shortly. I'm just reckon now another couple of casts.
Well, Frank, I give you, you had the lake to yourself there now, but I make a comeback here.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, Con, but the flies are on. I wouldn't fish them.
I got this cast untangled now, Frank, and you know, is there money on this, Frank, this evening?
Oh, there's a lot of money on it, Con. I'm off the rising one there now.
Now, don't be trying to unsettle me, Frank.
I'm telling you.
That's one of the ways of unsettling a fella.
Just boiled at it there now. He didn't go for it.
You know, it's like the lads in the pub one evening that were talking there about two fellas came in off the lake, you see. And Michael, when a fish comes up and you miss him and you don't get him, the fisherman says, "I got a rise. I got a rise," you see. But there was two gentlemen talking in the pub there this year in Headford, and they were out fishing, you see, and they were, as the night was wearing on, they were getting more and more rises. So one fellow was telling the other fellow all the rises he got, and the other fellow said, no, he got more rises than him, that he got 4 rises up at the Point of Curnamore, and he only got 2 rises there. So this old boatman was listening, and he says to them, "Tell me, lads," he says, "how do you cook them rises?" So that finished the conversation. Well, dusk is just falling now over Loch Carrib, Michael, and it's coming into that delicate last half hour, shall we say, of fishing. And this can be a real good time if the fish decide to move at all. Frequently they move just before the dusk, and even into the dusk, well into the dusk, into the dark, fish will take flies off the water. But to do that, we've got to have a hatch. Now this evening, you see, hatches this time of year particularly can be very unpredictable. And as Frank was telling you yesterday, we had a great hatch of olives, which is a way out of season, you know. And if we had a hatch of flies here now, something like this hour of the evening, like you have buzzards, green peters, or, you know, something like that, or sedge even.
What exactly is a hatch then?
A hatch is when a lot of flies, you see, they live down in underneath the water, down in the bottom as larvae. And whenever they're ready to hatch, they swim up, the larvae rises to the top of the water, and there the fly emerges from the larvae. And at that stage, the fly is very vulnerable because his wings are wet, and he flutters on top of the water just for a second until the breeze dries his wings, and then he's gone. Now, depending on the weather conditions, he may stay on the water for quite some time. If there's a strong breeze blowing, he may not be able to get up. And that's when the trout really tuck into them, when they're vulnerable. In nature, you know, Michael, it seems to be the way that when he's down, kick him. So when the trout get a chance at the flies, when they're smacked into the water with the breeze, they gobble them up, you know.
Does the sound change as darkness comes around?
Well, the sound of the lake will change very much with the weather. Sometimes we're out here, and that was a great tradition among boatmen. They listened very much to the sounds of the lake, and they could tell you what tomorrow's weather would be like, judging by the sound of the wave on the shore and the rattle of the wave on the stones, the particular rattle that it brought out of the stones. They used to judge what the next day's wind would be like, or whether the wind was going to change. I often was out with the late Jim Monaghan, and he'd say, "Oh, did you hear that? The shore there?" "No," I'd say. "Well, listen," he'd say, "do you hear the shore there rattling?" "Yeah," I'd say. "What about it?" "The wind's going to change," he'd say. And as sure as a foot on a duck, yes, the wind would change. They knew from the sounds what was around them. And of course, the birds and all that, they were all great signs to them as well. They watched the birds and the... Oh, but the sounds in the lake are wonderful out here. You have the curlews on the islands, particularly when they're nesting, they're in and out feeding their young, and there's activity. The gulls come along then, and gulls are a great beacon for anglers, because the gulls here on the lake, they eat the flies. And if we come out on the lake and we want to know where the best hatch of flies is today, we look around and we see where the gulls are. And the gulls will be in the water, flying along, scooping up the flies as well, eating them. And that's where we go, and that's where the fish are as well.
Can we hear something in the distance there?
There's an engine, yeah, there's a boat coming away down the lake now from... Yeah, I can see it just in the dim distance there. It's coming down from Inchigill. Someone's been fishing on Inchigill. Have you seen a rise, Frank?
Yeah.
Can you cover him?
What's happening here?
Frank has seen a trout rising, and he's not just directly in front of him. He's to one side, and I'm keeping my head down here to give him a chance to cover the trout with the flies, Michael. And hopefully this trout will take him now. That's a trout that rose them. A free-rising trout, you know. Well, again, the sounds of the lake, you know, the day you can hear the sound of an engine, it's not supposed to be a great day for fishing.
Yeah.
Well, so that would mean probably that the atmosphere is low, you know, and that sounds are magnified in that situation. That the atmospheric pressure, depending on how it is. Some of the old fishermen used to say here that if you heard the sound of the cuckoo or the sound of an engine in the distance, it was no good for fishing. And I used to hear some of the fishermen saying that Munawal Toin Fluchart, Yelain called it Jabahumahura Garab. And by that they meant that unless your backside was getting wet on Loch Corribs, there was no point in being out fishing. So, Michael, that may explain why we have no fish at the minute here in the boat, because we're not getting wet.
Are these not excuses as well? No?
There are also excuses, but there's also truth in the excuses. The low pressure doesn't help, but it's also handy to have that if things aren't going well.
That boat is...
That boat has come down all the way from Inchigill now. Nothing happening, Frank.
Very bad now, Frank.
Very poor, yeah. There must be rain on it.
Yeah, there is rain on it.
I can see a big depression coming in there behind the Connemara Hills. So
no, there is rain on it,
I expect that's what's keeping them down, you know.
Yeah. The two fish that came to me there, like, you know, they hadn't a notion of taking it.
No, just, they're very half-hearted, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They just weren't interested, like.
The rain is not a good thing.
No, well, when the rain is coming in like that, it's bringing in a low again, like, you know. And any kind of, when the conditions are changing, it's bad. You want settled conditions for good fishing. Now, that's not saying you won't get fish. You know, you can get fish in these conditions too. But the ideal conditions is, you know, the wind to be steady and in the one direction, preferably south or southwest, for a couple of days, you know, and nice settled weather. And that is the ultimate, you know. That's what we look for. They're the conditions we would be wishing for.
Colin, you've always been a boatman. What was your...
Yes, I started off in Donegal as a child. I fished the rivers and lakes in my native Donegal, and I moved to County Galway. Well, I boated on Lough Fearn, my home lake in Donegal, which is near Kilmacrenan. In my youth, I learned boating there, and subsequently, I have boated in Curraghs off the west coast here, and I've boated on Galway Bay quite a bit. And I've been, as I say, since 1963, I've been coming here to Loch Corrib.
You've had another profession?
Oh, yes. I was in the Garda for 37 years, so that brought me around quite a bit, and I saw a lot of the west of Ireland here, and invariably ended up in some of the nicest fishing and boating spots in it.
So you used to catching slippery characters?
Oh, very used to catching slippery characters. They're down there on the bottom, and they're certainly not coming up. Despite our best overtures, the Corrib trout are saying no thank you at the minute. But like that, as you can see yourself, we're out here now for a couple of hours, Michael, and we've thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. We've enjoyed the boating and the beautiful scenery and the lake. And we've seen a few fish. And a lot of the time here to us anglers, it doesn't make a difference whether we get a fish or not for a day out here. We enjoy it so much that a fish is really a bonus.
Not looking too good now, is it?
It's looking terrible.
A good recordings of the last trip pulling in fish, but the that wouldn't be ethical. That was quite realistic there, Frank.
Oh yeah, you could do that, no problem at all. You could that's a 6-pounder there, like. You know, and this is a pound lad. You just tell me what size you want.
There's a 4-pounder there.
Oh yeah, the 4-pounder be. Oh.
Frank, we're not going to do it.
No.
Night is closing in, and I think it's time we left the fish to their own devices for the night, Frank.
I think so, no, Frank.
They've had one up on us this evening here, but
we have a journey home.
We have a journey to do home, and I think it's time we reeled in and went back.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for a
no problem, Michael.
Very pleasant.
I don't leave you at home anymore.
A very pleasant evening.
I think you're the jinx.
You're welcome, Mike.
I've heard a lot of excuses today, but
that's it.
That's the worst
one. We would have caught fish.
Well, we're coming right into the harbour here at Greenfields now, and it's a nice setting with the lights on and night coming down. Lovely, peaceful, tranquil setting. There are a few anglers in here ahead of us mooring their boats that have been on the lake during the day, and I'd say safely say we're the last boat in, you know.
Any luck?
Two. Good. See, the fella, your man will be dick got some nice fish today, mate.
Did he?
The one in Chigiri, 5 or 6 good ones.
Oh, lovely.
I got 2 nice ones of that.
Good.
Were you out all day?
Those are the sounds of boating and of the lake.
Are you getting there again?
Yeah, they're very unique. Well, in a couple of weeks' time, it'll be all over for us. We'll be pulling the boats home, and we won't be out here again until the middle of February, if we're alive and well. Please God.
Fine job.
That's it, the end of a perfect evening. Are you going out again tomorrow, Frank?
No, I'm not tomorrow. No. I'm out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday.
Ah.
So I have a few busy days ahead of me.
It's a busy week.
Yeah, from now until the season.
Ah, yes,
at
the end of the season. Well, thank you very much, Frank, indeed, for the lend of your rod there.
No problem.
Having left my own back at base.
Are you disappointed we didn't catch?
I'm not really, Michael, you know. We had a lovely evening's boating and the good company and telling the yarns, and you know that each cast you saw in the water, you're there in anticipation that this is going to be it, the next cast and the next cast, and it goes on like that, and the hours just fly by.
Come trouty, come perchy, come pikey to me. Come pikey, come perchy, come trouty to me, and so on and so forth.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.